morning, Cascadia. Today is Monday, January 27th, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Headlines for today. Hey, kids, it's school choice week, another opportunity for the right-wing demagogues to privatize everything from your private parts to your public schools. So hurry on down and sign up for your children to attend schools where everybody looks, acts, and thinks exactly like you. There's safety in the private sector. And here's your chance to tell President Obama and Congress to back Senator Bernie Sanders' bid to use war money to care for veterans. What a concept, eh? You read about it on Truth Out, and you can do something about it right here. We're going to be giving you information today on how to access the petition and sign on. And there's a huge push in Vermont, even as a public banking advocate getting fired by the city of Montpelier after the mayor, John Holler, called her an anti-capitalist. Ooh. I'm surprised we're allowed to say that on the radio anymore. And Mayor Holler is a paid lobbyist, by the way, for Bank of America and Wells Fargo. What's the only thing he missed out on is Chase, but I'm sure that that's in the pipeline somewhere. And speaking of pipelines, a natural gas pipeline operated by no less than, wait for it, TransCanada Corporation exploded and caught fire in the Canadian province of Manitoba on Saturday, shutting off gas to thousands of residents. And it's Manitoba, people. Sub-zero temperatures. A prominent climatologist is at the eye of the storm in a libel battle with deniers of man-made global warming. And he has gone on record saying that he's being targeted as a part of a well-funded campaign to silence and discredit the entire environmental movement. The National Weather Service has this for us today, mostly cloudy, highs around 49, and that old east wind bucketing down on us at 14 miles per hour. It's mainly after four temperatures in the 40s, low 40s, east wind 10 to 14, gusts up to 21 for tomorrow, rain likely, and highs around 47. Chance of rain is pretty much 100% for tomorrow night. Rain indeed, and lows around 42. Not so much wind, but then who needs it when you got the rain coming down? We have an alternative forecast for you, which we're going to put on the KBOO website, because we have right now Stephen Zunis. Stephen Zunis is going back to teaching. He's back in the classroom. And it's a different classroom now. Ben Gurion said at the inception of the State of Israel that it was okay to practice ethnic cleansing on the Palestinian people because the old would die and the young would forget. It is now H.R. 35 has made it illegal for Stephen Zunis to actually teach the truth in his Middle East studies, his introductory, I believe, is Middle Eastern studies class. And it's been two articles out recently by Stephen Zunis, my guest right now. Both of them are of no doubt great interest. Many listeners probably already have read them. But this is of particular interest to me because it was, we should have remarked this, January 15th of 2009, Operation Cast Lead descended upon the people of Gaza who had no place to run, no place to hide. White phosphorus was used. I have right in front of me now the Goldstone report. And I've read on the line, Stephen Zunis. Good morning, Stephen. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, good to be with you.
It's great to hear your voice. Thanks for joining us. There are two articles that we will post links to, but this issue, this story in particular on H.R. 35 is of great interest to me, particularly in light of the fact that we are now we're acknowledging nonetheless the five-year anniversary of the wanton attack on Gaza, which was indeed a war crime by any set of standards. Can you talk a little bit about H.R. 35 and what restrictions it puts on places on you and others teaching Middle Eastern studies?
Well, first of all, it's not a binding law. It does not make it illegal. It was a resolution.
But
nevertheless, it was only passed by the California State Assembly back in 2012. But it was initially put forward as a opposing acts of anti-Semitism on state university campuses. And 66 of the 88 members of the California State Assembly signed on to that. However, unbeknownst to some of them, at least, at least half the resolution was not talking about what are unquestionable acts of anti-Semitism, such as painting swastikas on the wall of the Hillel office or something.
Yes.
Yucky like that, but many legitimate criticisms of Israeli policies, and included clauses, and this is the one that jumped out at me since I'm a professor, that said acknowledging ethnic cleansing by the State of Israel was considered anti-Semitic discourse, which should not be tolerated in the classroom. Similarly, accusing Israel of crimes against humanity, which Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and the Dolstein report you mentioned accused Israel of doing in the Operation Cast Lead 5 years ago, and other times that too would be they say should be banned, as well as advocacy for boycott, divestment, and sanctions. in light of the campus activism regarding mostly targeting mostly U.S. corporations that are investing in supporting the Israeli occupation and settlements. Now, the good news is that, like I say, it only passed one house. It was non-binding. The stridently pro-Israel president of the University of California system rejected it as being, had become law, it would not have passed constitutional. It does have kind of a chilling effect, especially, let's say, you're a tenure-track assistant professor, and you know that the overwhelming bipartisan majority of the California legislature is on saying, it shouldn't happen. Now, the reason I wrote this article now is both I was classes today. I recall this thing, but also, despite a number of members of the General Assembly saying, "Hey, this is a bait and switch by the Republican sponsor. We didn't know this is about Israel." All attempts last year to replace or amend the H.R. 35 failed. It never even came to a vote, or one very weak version sort of made it to a committee, but not really. And this is in a state where the Democrats have a supermajority. But it's just sort of underscore. So this is more. Again, there's not a legal question here, but it does. It's a rumble palace being suppressed, even by leaders in the acknowledging Israel's ethnic cleansing is not anti-Israel. Many Israelis themselves acknowledge it. The evidence of ethnic cleansing has been revealed by Israeli historians using Israeli archives. This does not mean that Israel does not have a right to exist. In many countries, not the least of which our own, of course, have been established doing ethnic cleansing and worse to their indigenous population. But a legislator cannot teach a document.
The term anti-Semitic in this instance, of course, is meaningless, because what we're talking about would be anti-ethnic cleansing, anti-apartheid, no matter what. That's not anti-Semitic, it's anti-ethnic cleansing. I wanted to be briefly, in the minute we have left, to ask you one question, the tie-in question here with regard to Syria and the talks that had been going on in Switzerland, the humanity sort of character of the talks. So it's showing the pictures of what's happened to women, to children, civilian populations, and the world recoiling in horror at what's been done. The same types of terror and violence have been perpetrated on Palestinians, and very similar, and yet the world has turned a blind eye. It's essentially turned its back. So when can we expect to have world leaders convene in Switzerland to discuss the plight of the Palestinian people?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You can almost go word for word the rationalizations of those who are defending the Assad regime, the rationalizations of those who defended Netanyahu, for example, and others in terms of wars on Gaza. They both say, Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, the United Nations, they're all biased against us. Oh, the people we're fighting are terrorists. No, they're responsible for civilian deaths because they're using human shields. You know, I mean, you go down the every single argument, and those who are rationalizing for Assad's terror are the same using the same language as those who rationalize for Israeli terror.
Steve, we're out of time completely. Thank you so much for joining us today. There's a great deal more, of course, to talk about on this, but nonetheless, we have to go now. My guest has been Stephen Zunis. This has been Ecoscadia for Monday, January 27, 2014. Kate Welch engineered the show today. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the 24th annual Cascades Festival of African Films, which will be held from January 31st through March 1st at the Portland Community College Cascade Campus and the Hollywood Theater. The 24th season will open with Gree Gree, a drama set in Chad, following a young man who, despite suffering from partial paralysis, becomes a renowned dancer at the local nightclub. The film will show on January 31st at 6:30 and 9 at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard, Portland, Oregon. Over 20 films will be screened in this year's 24th annual Cascade African Film Festival, beginning on January 31st, running through March 1st. For more information, please go to our website at kboo.fm and click on the right-hand side of the page under Community Events.
This is Jeremy Scahill, author of Dirty Wars, and you're listening to KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or wilkincpas.com.
And this KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Merrill Hurst University, dedicated to helping working adults revitalize their careers with five-part MBAs, including the Green MBA in Sustainable Business. Evening, weekend, and online options help students keep days free, work and life commitments. BU.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Every day, the tar sands operations in northeastern Alberta produce 2 million barrels of oil, and within a few years, they are projected to double their production. But for tar sands oil production to remain profitable, all this heavy crude oil must make its way to the markets that are far removed from these remote landlocked operations. This morning, we'll talk about two proposed pipeline projects that would carry the tar sands-derived heavy crude to the Pacific coast. Crossing British Columbia's remote mountainous wilderness and traversing some of the last remaining pristine salmon streams in North America, these proposed pipeline projects are stirring up strong opposition from a powerful coalition of First Nations bands and environmental groups across British Columbia. My guest this morning is Ben West, tar sands campaign director for Forest Ethics in Vancouver, BC. Ben, welcome to Locus Focus.
Oh, thank you. Good morning.
Well, in America, America south of the 49th parallel, most of the awareness about tar sands is pipeline controversy. But when you go north of the 49th parallel and you go do a web search, you discover that there's a huge amount of concern about a lot of other aspects of tar sands production and the outputs from the tar sands that are having impacts all across Canada, and that